Okay, 2 Samuel chapter 19, verse number 9 is where we're starting tonight. We're going to be talking about David's return home. David's return home. You know, returning home after being away for quite a while is an exciting event. I remember when I was a boy, I shouldn't say a boy, I guess I was kind of a boy. I was in Bible college in my university training, and the Bible college I went to was an 8-hour drive away from home. And so I drive my car there for the 8 hours. I had to go through Chicago and all those kind of terrible places to get there. I'd get over to the Bible college. And the only time I'd come home for the whole year would be at Christmas time. We'd have about a week and a half off at Christmas time. And then at the middle of the American summer, which was June, July, and August, we head off. So those two times were the times when I'd drive home. It was so exciting. You know, when the days were getting close, boy, we get out of school on, you know, the 15th of December, and we get to go home for a couple of weeks, and we're counting the days down, thinking about it, got our bags all packed, we're ready to go, can't concentrate on all the schoolwork, having a hard time. And then they dismiss us. Well, what they did at Christmas time is that they always sang at Christmas time, they sang the Messiah, which is a very famous Christmas cantata-like thing. And they'd sing the Messiah, and after Messiah was done, you could go. And so this is like 9 o'clock at night or so, and everybody runs out to the parking lot, jumps in their car, takes off. So we're headed home, drive all night, and get home early in the morning. But all excited, you know, about getting home. And, you know, all of you have been there, done that. You know, times when you've been away and you think, oh, it'd be great to go home. And you get home and it's just such an enjoyable thing to be look forward to getting home. I think David must have had some of those thoughts in his mind. He'd been away now for probably several months. I don't think it was just a real short little time when he gets away. Because, I mean, all these things take time. It took time for them to travel away. It took time for them to travel up to Manaim where he was. It took time for them to organize their soldiers and bring all the soldiers in. It took time for the battle to take place. It took time for all the battle to be finished. I mean, I don't know how long it was. At the least, it was several weeks. It could have been a few months that David's been away from home now. And it brings us to the point now where David's getting ready to head home. Chapter 19, and look at verse number 9. Chapter 19, verse number 9, it says, "And all the people were at strife throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, 'The king saved us out of the hand of our enemies, and he delivered us out of the hand of the Philistines. Now he has fled out of the land for Absalom, and Absalom, whom we anointed over us, is dead in battle. Now therefore, why speak ye not a word to bring the king back?'" Now, let's just stop and think about this. This is weird. These guys, as we look at this first section here, we see David's trip home. All right? And the people of Israel, they're all the guys that had sided with Absalom. They're all the ones that say, hey, we're tired of David. Absalom's got it all going for him. Let's go side with Absalom. So they've all sided with Absalom. And they go to the battle. Absalom dies in battle. And they say, well, now what do we do? You know, Absalom's dead. Let's go back to David. He was a pretty guy after all. He took care of us, met our needs. Let's go back to David. So they kind of change around. Now they're headed back to be with David. And so they said, you know, we really need to call David back and invite him back as our king. But then we read on in verse number 11, "And King David sent to Zadok and to Abiathar, the priests." Remember, they were the two that stayed back in Jerusalem and had the two boys that sent the word to him. All right, so Zadok and Abiathar, they stayed back in Jerusalem. And he sent word to them, "Why are ye the last to bring the king back to his house, seeing the speech of all Israel is to come to the king, even to his house? Ye are my brethren, ye are my bones and my flesh. Wherefore, then, are ye the last to bring back the king? And say ye to Amasa, art thou not of my bone and my flesh? God do so to me also, more also, if thou be not captain of the host before me continually in the room of Joab." And he bowed his bowed the heart of all the men of Judah, even as the heart of one man, so that they sent this word unto the king, "Return thou and all thy servants." All right, so here's the situation. David hears that all Israel, all the guys that were his enemy just a few weeks ago, now they're all decided, well, he's not so bad after all. Let's call him back as our king. So they're all get the word that David is, you know, well, we might as well call David back. And David hears about this and he says, now that's not really right. These guys were against me. It really ought to be my family and friends that are inviting me back instead of all these guys inviting me back. And so he contacts the people back in Jerusalem and says, hey, Come on, get with it. You need to send message to bring me back to Jerusalem, because it's not right for all of these guys to bring me back. You're my family and my blood and relatives, and you aren't even doing anything. So he kind of stirs them on, and they said, yes, we need to bring him back. And they said, David, come back. We want you to come back to Jerusalem. All right, so here's the invitation to come back. Now, what can we learn from something like this? Here's some things that I find in here that it can be helpful to us. Number one is that the men of Israel had deserted David and followed the vain promises of Absalom, and now they're calling him back. They were changeable people. You know, changeable people are not reliable. They're not people that you can trust. They're not trustworthy, reliable people. And the Bible warns us not to meddle with changeable people. All right. Over in the book of Proverbs, chapter 24, verse 21, it says, my son, fear thou the Lord and the king, and meddle not with them that are given to change. All right, we talked about the word meddle a week or so ago. That means to get involved in somebody else's business. All right, he says, don't meddle with those that are given to change. So he said, we need to find friends that are stable, friends that are headed the right direction, and they stay on the right track, and they don't bob around here and there and everywhere. All right, so we need to be careful about that. And what does God tell us? When we were on our men's retreat a couple weeks ago, we studied a verse in First Corinthians 15:58. It says, "Be steadfast, therefore, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for you know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord." God said He wants us to be steadfast and unmovable. He says, "This, I want you to know what you believe, stand for what you believe, and don't budge. Stay put, stay firm, stay strong." And so what God is reminding us of here is that we really need to be careful not to be around people that are changeable, all the time changing their thinking, changing their ways. He says, you need to be a stable person, and you need to be around stable people so that you stay going the right direction. You young people need to be very careful about that. You go to school, and if you're around some people that are, it's changeable as weather. You know, one day they're a nice person, and the next day they're mean. And one day they obey, the next day they're disobeying. You know, those are changeable people. Don't be around those kind of people. You need to be around people that are always the same. They do what's right. You can trust them. You can depend upon them. And you know, we need to be that kind of a person. You know, everybody that knows us ought to be able to look at us and say, there is a young person, there is an adult who is stable. You can depend upon them. They're always the same. They do what's right. You can depend on them to be a faithful person. So this is something we can learn from this group of people that are trying to bring David back. Now, we find something that is kind of humorous, but it just shows the human nature of our soul. Look down in chapter 19, verses 41 and 42. All right, verse number 41 of chapter 19. And it says, and behold, all the men of Israel came to the king and said unto the king, why have our brethren, the men of Judah, stolen thee away, and have brought the king and his household and all David's men with him over Jordan? And all the men of Judah answered the men of Israel, because the king is our kin. King is near kin to us. Wherefore then be ye angry for this matter? Have we eaten at all of the king's cost, or hath he given us any gift? And the men of Israel answered the men of Judah and said, we have 10 parts in the king, and we have also a more right to David than ye. Why then did ye despise us, that our advice should not be first had in bringing back the king? And the words of the men of Judah were fiercer than the words of the men of Israel. Alright, so here's the 10 tribes of Israel and the 2 tribes of Benjamin and Judah. They're fighting over David. They're saying, it's not fair. You guys brought him back and you didn't ask our opinion. You didn't let us help you bring him back. Alright, now listen, here's the situation. These guys, they're arguing over, why didn't you let us help bring the king back instead of rejoicing that the king came back? Alright, they weren't really worried about the glory of having the king home again. That's not what was on their mind. What were they thinking? We didn't get any honor in this. If we could have brought him back, we would have made it really nice. And we would have, boy, the king would have really liked us because we would have done it this way and that way. And so they're really thinking about a prideful feeling in their heart of how I could do it better, how I could gain something. And it was not about honoring the king. It was about honoring themselves. You know, and we see that so often, often happen in our lives. You know, I don't know about you, but I struggle many times with pride-filled thoughts. Things that I do for myself or so that I can be lifted up. You know, the Bible tells us in Proverbs 11, verse 2, it says, when pride cometh, then cometh shame, but with the lowly is wisdom. He says, when pride comes, it's going to bring shame, but with the lowly. Lowly means low. It's the opposite of proud, humble. All right? With the lowly or humble, God said there's honor with that. It gives wisdom. All right? So we need to be careful not to get involved in pride. Don't let pride get a hold of your life. It's a hard thing sometimes. We struggle with it. And we need to really work at it and ask God to help us. Now, as we move on, we see here that David talked to three different men on his return back to Jerusalem. All right, verse number 16, he talks to a man named Shimei. Who remembers who Shimei was? Anybody remember Shimei? We met him before when David was leaving, running away. Who was Shimei? That's right. He was the guy that was throwing stones and cursing David. He was cursing David and saying bad things about David and throwing stones at him. And so Shimei realizes, king's back on the throne again. I better go see him real fast, because if I don't, he may take my head off for what I did. So he goes back to see David right away. And we read in 16, it says, and Shimei, the son of Gera, a Benjamite, which was of Bahurim, hasted and came down with the men of Judah to meet King David. And there were 1,000 men of Benjamin with him, and Ziba the son of the servant of the house of Saul, and 15 sons, and his 15 sons and his 20 servants with him. And they went over Jordan before the king, and there went out over a ferry boat to carry over the king's household and to do what he thought good. And Shimei, the son of Gera, fell down before the king as he was come over Jordan. And he said unto the king, let not my lord the king impute the iniquity unto me, neither do thou remember that which thy servant did perversely the day that my lord the king went out of Jerusalem, and that the king should take it to his heart. For thy servant doth know that I have sinned, and therefore, behold, I am come first this day of all the house of Joseph to go down to meet my lord the king. All right, so here's the situation. He comes and he begs for his life. It's really what he's doing. He's saying, I'm really sorry, king. I shouldn't have done that. What I did was wrong. It was evil. I shouldn't have thrown stones at you and cursed you and said those bad things about you, king. I'm really sorry. Please forgive me. You know, this guy Shimei, we're going to meet him a little bit later on when Solomon takes over. Actually, we may not be studying into that, so I'll tell you a little bit about that. David told Solomon when Solomon became king, he said, Solomon, keep an eye on this guy, Shimei. You can't trust him, and you need to tell him that he better behave himself or he's going to lose his life. And so Solomon told him, all right, you stay in Jerusalem. And as long as you stay in Jerusalem and never leave the city of Jerusalem, I'll let you live. But if you go outside of the city of Jerusalem, you're going to die. Well, he stayed in Jerusalem for a while, and then his donkeys or something ran away. And so he went off looking for him, and word got back to Solomon. And Solomon called him in and said, didn't I tell you to stay in Jerusalem?
Yeah.
Did you leave? Off with your head. He was done. All right. So he lost his life because he was not a trustworthy man. But during David's time, David begged his life and begged for forgiveness, and David forgave him. He didn't. He said, I will not kill you. It wasn't that he just said, all right, it's all okay. But he says, I won't kill you. But he told Solomon, watch out for this guy because he can't be trusted. And then that event took place with Solomon. All right. Now, as we think about this, what can we learn from there? All right. Shimei was wrong for cursing David. No question about that. You shouldn't curse God's anointed. He was the king of the land. He shouldn't do that. But one thing we got to give him credit for. Shimei was a wise enough man at this point in his life to come back and admit he was wrong and ask for forgiveness. You know, that is something that's so hard to do. You know, I think if there's one thing in life that every one of us struggles to do, we struggle to go to somebody that we've wronged and look him in the face and say, I'm sorry. I was wrong. Would you please forgive me? That's hard. That is really hard. And Shimei gave us a good example. He might not have been the greatest guy in the world, but at least he had the wisdom to apologize for what he did wrong. And that's something every one of us can learn. You know, you young people, you will help yourself abundantly if you will learn to say, I'm sorry, I was wrong. Please forgive me. All right? And you, when you get married, you're going to need to be able to say, I'm sorry, I was wrong. Please forgive me. And if you don't, what's going to happen? You're going to have conflicts and problems and heartaches in your marriage. Why? Because you need to learn to say, I'm sorry. Please forgive me. I was wrong. I'm sorry. I was wrong. Please forgive me. Right? Practice that when you're young, because you're going to need it the rest of your life. Humble yourself and admit, I was wrong. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. And that is something you will never regret learning. So remember Shimei and how that was an important thing. But then he talks to another man named Mephibosheth. Who was Mephibosheth? What about him? It was Saul's son. He was a crippled guy. Okay, he was Saul's son. He was a crippled fella. Remember, he was the one that when they were running away, the nurse was carrying him on her shoulders to try to run away. When she heard that Saul had died, she was going to run away and keep him safe because she didn't want all the relatives to be killed. And she tripped and fell, and he falls down, breaks both of his legs. He's crippled for the rest of his life. So Mephibosheth. And Mephibosheth stayed in Jerusalem when David fled. And the reason is because Ziba, remember his servant Ziba? Ziba deceived him. Mephibosheth said, Ziba, go saddle me some donkeys so I can ride with the king. And Ziba didn't do it. And then remember what Ziba did? He went to the king and told the king a lie and said that Mephibosheth was trying to take over the kingdom and didn't want to come because he was hoping that he'd be able to be the king. Told him these lies, and David believed Ziba at that time because David was all emotionally shook up. But now David comes back, so he finds Mephibosheth, and he speaks to him. Look at verse 24. Verse 24, Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king and had neither dressed his feet nor trimmed his beard nor washed his clothes from the day that the king departed until the day that he came again in peace. All right, so he's kind of dirty and grubby and smelly. Right. Why did he do that? Because he was saying, I am grieving that the king is gone. I'm grieving. And it came to pass, verse 25, when he was come to Jerusalem to meet the king, that the king said unto him, wherefore wentest not thou with me, Mephibosheth? And he answered, my lord, O king, that my servant deceived me. For thy servant said, I will saddle me an ass, that I may ride thereon. And go to the king, because thy servant is lame. And he slandered thy servant unto the king, my lord the king. And my lord the king is as an angel of God. Do therefore what is good in thine eyes. And all my father's house were but dead men before my lord the king. Yet didst thou set thy servant among them that did eat at thine own table. What right, therefore, have I yet to cry any more unto the king? What a humble fellow. He comes to the king and says, my servant tricked me, he deceived me, but, O king, you do what is right in your eyes, because you deserve all the glory. We were dead men until you gave me the privilege of sitting at your table and eating at your table. I have nothing more to say. I didn't deserve any of that. I owe you everything. Thank you for what you've done for me. And David wasn't mad at him and says, all right, I'll give you back half of the land that I gave to Ziba. Now, I don't really understand why he didn't give it all back. Maybe it's the wording. Maybe he did give it back. Maybe Ziba wasn't just in charge of it. I don't really know. But David gives it back to him. Gives him back some of the land. So David's not mad at Mephibosheth. All is well between him and Mephibosheth. Now, Mephibosheth had a good attitude, even when Ziba deceived him. You know, there's times in life when people hurt us. They may let us down. They may hurt us. They may do something unkind to us. How are we going to respond? Now, Mephibosheth had a good reason to be very angry at Ziba. Because Ziba lied to the king and told these lies about how Mephibosheth was going to try to take over the kingdom and become the king. That was not true. Mephibosheth was a humble man. But Mephibosheth, we don't see him getting angry. What's he say? He says, O king, you do what's right in your sight because you're the king and you gave me what I don't deserve. So I don't have anything to say, king. You just take care of it however you feel is best. He wasn't upset. He kept a good attitude. He kept a proper respect for the king. And that is something very good for us to remember. Psalm 27 verse 10 says, when thy father and thy mother forsake thee, then the Lord will take thee up. When other people turn their back on us, when other people reject us, or other people are mean to us, or other people hurt us, how are we supposed to respond? God says, even when your father and mother turn their back on you, then you need to trust in the Lord. It's times like that we need to just say, Lord, I need you. I need you, Lord. Help me to do what's right. Help me to keep a good attitude in a bad situation. And so we need to just ask God to help us and guide us in these things. Then we find that he meets one other person, and that is Barzillai. We see him in verse number 31. Barzillai was an old man. He was a man of 80 years old. And he was the man that came to help David with supplies. He was one of the men that provided food and clothing and beds and all these kind of things. He was apparently a wealthy man. And he came to help David as he needed, David and all his family needed a place to stay. They needed food and all this kind of stuff. So Barzillai was one that helped him with this thing. And David goes to meet him and speaks with him. Verse number 31, and Barzillai the Gileadite came down to Rogelim and went over Jordan with the king and conducted him over Jordan. And now Barzillai was a very aged man of 80. Score is 20, so 80 is 80. So he was 80 years old, and he had provided the king's sustenance while he lay at Mannaim, for he was a very great man. All right, so he was a wealthy man. And the king said unto Barzillai, come thou over with me, and I will feed thee with me in Jerusalem. And Barzillai said unto the king, how long have I yet to live that I should go up with the king to Jerusalem? I am this day 80 years old, and can I discern between good and evil? Can thy servant taste what I eat or what I drink? Can I hear any more the voice of the singing men and the singing women? Wherefore then should thy servant yet be yet a burden unto my lord the king? And thy servant will go a little way over Jordan with the king. And why should the king recompense it me with such a reward? Let thy servant, I pray thee, turn back again, and I will die in mine own city and be buried in the grave of my father and my mother. But behold, thy servant Chimham, let him go over with my lord the king, and do to him what shall be good unto thee. Okay, now let's just stop there. So the king says, Barzillai, why don't you come back to Jerusalem? I'll take care of you for the rest of your life. And he says, oh, king, I don't want to do that. I'm an old man. I can't taste what I eat anymore. I can't hear very good. I'm just an old man. I'd be just a burden on you. Let me just stay home and die in my home city and be buried with my father and my mother. That's what I'd really prefer, king. Let me do that. But he says, I tell you what, king, if you really want to do some honor, then honor Chimham. Now, this Chimham, we don't know who he was. It might have been Barzillai's son. Might have been his son. He says, honor him instead. So what's David do? He says, sure, that's fine. You stay back home. You go back home with your family. That's fine. But I'll take Chimham with me. And he goes to Jerusalem, and David honored him, put him in the palace with him, gave him a place to live and eat, and honored him for the rest of, perhaps the rest of David's life because of the good that he had, that Barzillai had done to David. Now, we see here that David was showing thankfulness. You know, that's another principle that all of us can learn. From the youngest of us all the way up, we need to learn to be thankful. Learn to be thankful. Thankfulness is something very important. You know, saying thank you costs nothing but means a great deal. You stop and think about it. If you did something for somebody and they came to you and said, thank you very much, doesn't that kind of please your heart? Doesn't that kind of just, oh, I'm glad I did that for them. And they say a little thank you deep down inside because of what they did. So we feel good about that because they said thank you. You know, saying thank you isn't hard. It's easy. But we forget all too often. You know, us husbands, many times we forget to thank our wife for the nice meal she just cooked. You say, well, yeah, but it wasn't too nice. She burned some. Well, you know, think about all the good stuff she did in it. All right? We need to be thankful. We need to be thankful. And you children, many times you forget to thank mom and dad for all the stuff they do for you. Say, oh yeah, but mom and dad are, you know, But no, don't make excuses. Mom and dad give you food. They give you a place to live. They buy you clothes. They do all these things for you. Mom and dad are good to you. And you need to be thankful. And it's a good thing to regularly go up to them, give them a big hug and say, thank you for providing for me. Thank you for the food. Thank you for meeting my needs. Thank you for whatever it is that they've done for you. Think about it and ask God to help you to be a thankful person. You know, there's one of the Psalms. It's a very good Psalm. And it's a good one to memorize. All right, Psalm 100. Only five verses, not very long. It's a good one to memorize. But it says there, make a joyful noise unto the Lord, all ye lands. Serve the Lord with gladness. Come before his presence with singing. Know ye that the Lord, he is God. It is he that hath made us, and not we ourselves. We are his people and the sheep of his pasture. Enter into his gates with thanksgiving and into his courts with praise. Be thankful unto him and bless his name. For the Lord is good, his mercy is everlasting, his truth endureth to all generations. There is loads of stuff in that that'll help you. And it's all about being thankful. It's about being thankful. And we need to be thankful to God for all he's done to us. We forget so many times. When's the last time we thank God for dying on the cross for us? We just don't think of it. We need to thank him. Thank him for the things he's done for us. Thank him for the good things he's provided for us. Thank him for the blessings that brought your way. Thank him for the things that he does on a daily basis. We need to be thankful people. So let's work at being thankful. Okay? So we can learn that from Barzillai. So from each of these men, we see something for that we can learn from them. And with Shimei, we learned to be forgiving or ask, seek forgiveness. For Mephibosheth, we learn to have a good attitude and not be bitter toward people that do us wrong. And with Barzillai, we learn here to be thankful. Now we find something else happens. David's still having problems. Another man decides, I want to be king instead of David. This guy's name was Sheba. Look at chapter 20. Sheba. And it came, and there happened to be there a man of Belial, whose name was Sheba, the son of Bichri, a Benjamite. And he blew the trumpet and said, we have no part in David, neither have we inheritance in the son of Jesse. Every man to his tents, O Israel. So every man of Israel went up from after David and followed at Sheba, the son of Bichri. And so I don't know how many of them. It says all the men of Israel. Some of them certainly stayed with David. I don't know. But anyway, all I know is a whole bunch of them decided, yes, let's make Sheba the king. You know, we didn't get our way, and Judah didn't let us bring back the king, and we're mad at him for that. And they should have been more kind, should have let us bring the king back over the Jordan. And so let's forget about them. Let's go do it ourselves. Let's have Sheba as our king. So Sheba tries to become the king. So now David's got more problems. And David then sends Amasa to assemble the troops. Now, who is Amasa? All right, we talked about Amasa just a few moments ago, but let's try to put it in perspective here. Amasa had been the captain of Absalom's army. The captain of Absalom's army, Amasa. Now, when David told the people to bring him back to Jerusalem, he said, tell Amasa that I will make him the captain of my army instead of Joab. Now, I wonder why he did that. Any reason David might have been upset with Joab? He killed Absalom. All right. Joab killed Absalom. So David, I think, in the back of his mind, thinking, I'm going to get after this Joab. So I'm going to take him out of his place of captain, and I'm going to put Amasa in his place. Now, it doesn't really sound like a very wise choice. You don't usually choose your enemy's captain as your new captain of your army. That doesn't sound like a real good choice. But David was emotionally upset. He was angry with Joab, and Joab had killed his son. And so I'll make Amasa king. Our captain. So Amasa's captain, and David calls Amasa, says, all right, Amasa, go gather the troops together. We got to go after this Sheba and quash that rebellion before it gets out of hand. And so he says, I want you back here in 3 days with all the army. All right, and so the time goes, and he's not back on time. And he's late. And he finally gets going and takes off and gets on his way. And Joab, you know, Joab's going along, and now he's not the captain anymore. He's just one of the plain soldiers, and he's not real happy about it either. And so he goes up to Amasa, because Amasa was late in getting his job going, and he comes up to him and salutes him and tries to pretend like he's a nice guy and friendly, and he takes his sword and he stabs him and kills him. Now, Joab has not been a very nice guy. Joab has killed three people in cold blood. He is a murderer three different times. in his life. First of all, there was Abner that he killed sometime back, another one of David's military men. And then he killed Absalom, and now he kills Amasa. And Amasa, he drags him off the road, throws him in the bush, and says, all right, come on, Israel, let's go get Sheba. And he takes off after Sheba, and he says, I'm in charge now, Amasa's dead. And Joab takes off after Sheba. And they get to the city, and I'll just tell you the rest of the story because we're running short on time here. He gets to the city where Sheba's hiding out, and they besiege the city. Now, what's that mean to besiege the city? That's something all of you boys need to learn, besieging the city. Besieging the city means that they surrounded the city and wouldn't let anybody go in or out. Now, what would happen if we lived in a city and, let's just say your house. Let's say that somebody besieged your house and they circled your house and wouldn't let anybody go in or out for a long time. What would happen? You'd get hungry. You'd get hungry because you couldn't go out and get any food. And so they would besiege the city until the people inside were so hungry that they finally said, we surrender, we give up because we're starving to death. All right, so they besieged the city. And also in the besiege, one of the things that they would often do is they would build a bridge up to the door of the city, especially cities like this one. Apparently it had a moat around it. What's a moat? What's a moat?
Like a river around.
Okay, a big river around the city to help keep. They'd fill it full of crocodiles and stuff like that to keep people from getting close, okay? And so they, it sounds like the city probably had a moat around it of some sort. And so they would besiege the city, and they would take and build, they'd bring all their servants in, and they'd start carrying dirt and junk and wood and anything they could find, and they'd start piling it in there to build a bridge across this. So if they could get over the door of the city, then they would take their battling rams. You know, sometimes they would take a big log and they'd put ropes underneath it and everybody get on the sides of it, a whole bunch of soldiers, and they'd say, all right, ready, set, go, and run. And they'd all run with this big old huge log, and they'd get to the door, well, boom, and blow the door down with a big old heavy log when they were running into the in the castle. And then they'd run in and grab the soldiers and they'd try to conquer the city. So they besieged this city. And the people in the city, there was a wise woman in the city that hollered over the wall and said, Joab, let me talk to you. And Joab says, yes, what do you want? He says, why are you besieging the city? And Joab says, we got nothing against your city. We want one man, Sheba, the son of Bichri. And she said, I'll have his head thrown over the wall tomorrow morning. And so she went in and talked to the elders of the city. And they said, listen, if we don't kill this Bichri, Sheba, and throw his head over the wall, they're going to come and beat this city to the down, and we're all going to die. It's better that he dies than we all die. So they killed Sheba, cut his head off, threw it over the wall, and Joab says, blew the trumpet, says, war's over, head back home, Sheba's dead, and it was all done. All right. Now, all these kind of problems, why did all this happen? Because Sheba was a rebel, just like Absalom was a rebel. What happens to rebels in the Bible? You know, when we rebel against God-given authority, it causes problems every time. You know, that God-given authority may be your parents. It may be the laws of the land. It may be your church. It may be your husband. It may be your employer. It may be somebody that God has put over you. And when you rebel against their authority, you're always going to lose. You're always going to lose. It never pays. You know, there's all kinds of examples of this in the Bible. We saw that true with Absalom. Now we see it true with Sheba. What happened to Absalom? He died. What happened to Sheba? He died. And we got other examples in the Bible. I thought of just a few. There's probably a lot more I could have thought of. How about Samson? What happened to Samson? Well, Samson, he was the big hero, and then he got away from God, and he didn't do what God wanted, and he lost his eyes and lost his power, and he ends up being a slave and pushing the grindstone around like a cow in the grinding mill. Here old Samson, and they're pushing this thing around because he was now a slave with no eyes. And he finally begs God and says, God, give me my strength back one more time, and I'll die with the enemies. And he pushes down the walls of the temple, and it all comes falling down on top of him. He died with him. So he was a rebel against God. He didn't do what was right, and he ended up dying for it. We find another example of one that you might not be as familiar with, but there are three men in the Old Testament, Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. Korah was a man that rebelled against Moses and said, Moses, what right have you get to be always thinking you're the boss all the time? We're just as smart as you are. We can lead just as good as you can. You shouldn't be the boss around here. We want to start taking charge of Moses. You just step down and let us take over. And basically, he just was trying to overthrow Moses. And Moses fell on his face and says, God, be merciful to these guys. Don't let this happen. And so the whole thing evolves in a little time. And Moses, then the next day, God told him, he says, this is what you need to tell him. And Moses went out to talk to the people, and he says, all right, everybody get away from Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. All of you move back away from their houses. Don't get anywhere near their houses, and you're going to see what God's going to do. He said, if these men are doing what God wants, all will be well. But if they are not doing what God wants, God's going to do a special miracle and open up the ground and swallow them whole. And all of a sudden, there's a huge earthquake. The earth opens up, and all of their houses and all the people fall down in the crack, and the earth comes squashing back in, and they're hollering and screaming, and the Bible tells us they could hear their screams and shouts as they fell into the pit and died. Why did that happen? Because they're rebels. They rebelled against Moses and against God. They were rebellious. We find another example of a woman who was a rebel, Athaliah. Athaliah was the daughter of King Ahab, wicked old King Ahab and Jezebel. Athaliah married Jotham, that she married, of the kings of Judah. And so she's married to the king of Judah. And then Jotham dies, and Athaliah, she said, here's my chance. I'm going to be queen. And so what'd she do? She killed all of her kids, every one of them. She didn't let any of the children live, not one of them. All of her kids, all the king's kids, everybody that's related to king, she killed them. And said, now I'll be the queen. Nobody can take over the throne from me. I'm the queen now. For about 6 or 7 years, she was the queen. But she didn't realize it, but there was one baby that got away and didn't get killed. And they were raising that baby boy up. And when he got to be 7 years old, they brought him out and said, here's the new king. And take out Athaliah and kill her in the horse gate. And they took Athaliah out of the city. She's screaming and hollering, and they killed her in the horse gate. Why did that happen? Because she was a rebel. She was a rebel. See, I just show you all these things. God's showing us in the Bible, being rebellious against authority is not good. It's not good. Now, everybody that's a rebel doesn't die. That's true. But it is true that rebellion always will get you in trouble. It'll always get you in trouble. So, as we pull these things together, Proverbs chapter 13, verse number 1 says, a wise son hears his father's instruction, but a scorner heareth not rebuke. A wise son hears his father's instruction, but a scorner hears not rebuke. He won't listen. So don't be a scorner. Don't be a rebellious person. Listen to the authorities over you, and God will bless you. Now, as we pull it all together and review what we've learned tonight, first of all, we learned that we shouldn't meddle with changeable people. Number two, we learned that instead of we need to keep ourselves from going astray, we need to be stable and steadfast, unmovable. Number three, we learn to guard against pride in our hearts. Number four, we learn that we need to seek forgiveness when we've done wrong. Number five, we learn that when it is hard, even when it is hard, we need to keep a good attitude when people mistreat us. And people do sometimes. Keep a good attitude. Number six, we need to not forget to say thank you, because it costs nothing to be thankful, but it's very helpful. And number seven, when we're tempted to be rebellious, we need to remember the sad ending of people that get rebellious. We need to do what's right.